This is chord theory, I mean chords and their intervals. So we're going to play each example on one string, starting with a C chord. And so the reason you're doing this is you're looking at the intervals. The intervals of a major chord, a major triad, right? The distance between the first and third note, as it were. I don't mean the third note, I just mean the root and the third, I should say. The distance between the root and the third, i.e. fret 3 and fret 7, as it says in the tab. So there's two sets of numbers. The upper number is the number of the interval for that key, the 1, 3, 5, or octave. The lower numbers are the what fret you put your fingers on. So from fret 3 to fret 7 is two whole steps. It reinforces that from a root to a major third is two whole steps. And then when you go to fret 10, it reinforces that a major third to a fifth, 3 to 5, the top numbers, is a minor third, a step and a half. Any questions so far? And then it reinforces that from 5 to 8, is how many half steps? I'll let you figure that part out.
So it's...
That's right, it's 5 half steps. I mean, if you looked at the tab, you could just do 15 minus 10 equals 5, but I'm glad you did it the long way. And so we're just showing you like spatial relations. Remember, the major scale comes from one little physics. The major scale was originally called the Pythagorean scale, and that's how Pythagoras got the scale. Was he measured, like, where does the wave vibrate in relation to the string at the exact midpoint? Was one of them. So, if you took the exact length of this, let's say this fifth string that we were just playing, the exact middle point is the 12th fret, which is why it's an octave. Like when you, and then the. We have an equal tempered system, so all the notes have been evened out. They're not exactly in relation to Pythagoras' mathematics, but the next point would be like the fifth in relation to the A string. It would be like a third. Like the distance, roughly, when you put your finger at the A string, seventh fret, that's roughly a third the distance of the entire. So it's a harmonic series. The 12th fret is half. The fifth is third. The third, which is the fifth, too many numbers. The fourth fret, which is the third of the key, is probably, you know, a quarter of the distance. So these are all and then so he figured out all those harmonic, whatever it's called, harmonic relationships, and that became known as the Pythagorean scale. But back then, those instruments were pure. They were purely for they were they. The instrument was made for only one key. We take it for granted now we could play our instruments in 12 keys, but it wasn't always like that. Before, you know, like Bach's day, you had music that you would rarely travel to distant keys. You'd have all your music in one key, or if it did change keys, it would at most be one or two sharps or flats different from the key that you were in. Like if you were in F, you'd only go to, you know, either B flat or C or something. And then come back to F or not, whatever. But you certainly would never go from like F to A or something ridiculous like that. You couldn't modulate. And so that changed the whole canvas of, and one of the famous pieces of music is Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier. That's the name of his piece when the equal-tempered system first came out, when they made it so that all 12 notes would be equal, which compromised Pythagoras' ratios a little. Probably went off the deep end on that, but did you understand any of that? So that's so playing in different keys. But do you ever notice, like on the guitar, like you tune an E, and then C doesn't quite sound exactly right, right? Mm-hmm. In order for a guitar to be in tune, this is interesting. Well, I think it is. In order for the guitar to be like totally in tune, the G sharp on an E chord has to be annoyingly sharp, because it always sounds flat when you go to. And it's not because the guitar is something wrong with it. It's because we're compromising the real harmonic of each, you know. So we actually, some people say, you know, we play out of tune like all the time. It's true. There's no such thing as a perfectly intonated instrument, number one, physically. But beyond that, even if there was, we're not playing the exact intervals. So what I do whenever recording session or something, even electronic tuners will give you the open string, but that's only tuning down here. That has nothing to do with up here. So if it's a really important recording, I'll check octaves all over the neck, which is what I was trying to, like right there, I hear there's a little flatness, so I'll, and if you can, get reasonably comfortable in all those, then you're okay, you know. So I'm digressing here, but so we did on one string, and now we put that all together and we got a C chord. Next, C minor. Now, it goes without saying, well, I'm saying it, so it doesn't go without saying, that the three out of the four notes are going to be the same. There's still 1, 5, and 8, but the 3 has become flattened, so it's one fret down from where it was. Now the distance between 1 and minor 3 is how many frets?
3.
3 frets instead of 4. It's a step and a half instead of 2 whole steps. But now the distance between flat 3 and 5 is 2 whole steps. Distance between flat 3 and 5 is a total of 4 frets.
4, right, okay.
Why is that, how is that useful? It's useful in so many different ways. If I have a song that does like 1, flat 3, 5, you know, then I know I have to drag it up like that. I don't know, that's only one example. Let's continue. I'm digressing too much. So do your C minor and then play your C minor chord. Yep, and then we'll. Cool, moving on. C augmented. Here we have a sharp 5, so. Notice it's 4 frets in between each of those. The augment is one of those symmetrical chords, so when you do that chord that's listed there, you could move that up 4 frets and it would still be the same chord. Or another 4 frets. So you do that one, I'll do the very first one. 3, 4. And you can see it sounds the same. Making sense so far?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's keep going. C diminished. Yeah. Oh, I see. I'm just you and I played the 12th fret, but it's not on there because I only did the triad. C diminished, so 1, flat 3, flat 5, and then I'm back to a root already. In other words, C diminished 7 is coming up later. Right now we're just doing the triads. Okay? And how do you do that C, you already know C diminished 7, but you would just skip the third string, mute it for now. To mute it, I'd probably just lay one of the fingers up against it.
So,
like, don't even put that down, just have this finger mute it or something. I don't know. Alright, cool. Next, C sus 2. There is that there's lots of wide intervals, which is why this chord has like a nice, there's a certain open sound to it. When you play the chord that's there, it's like a C major bar chord. But instead of a third, do a regular C. But instead of the third on the fifth, yeah. Sounds kind of open and nice sounding, right? Part of the reason why it's so open is because those intervals are so open. You can't really see that when you do a chord like this. But what you're hearing, even though the notes are mixed up, is that big gap between 2 and 5 and that big gap between 5 and 1. So it's interesting. Like, all this music theory is only to illuminate or to explain why certain things sound the way they do, and so that when we like them, we can use them more, you know, in our compositions and in our voicings and everything else.
So the
In a C sus 2 chord, the 3 becomes 2. Instead of 1, 3, 5, 8, it's 1, 2, 5, 8. That's why there's such a big gap between 2 and 5. The next one is C sus. So instead of 1, 3, 5, 8, it's 1, 4, 5, 8. C sus, it's kind of has a floaty feeling to it. If you look at the voicing listed there, it goes 3-5-5-4, 3-5-5-6. Yeah. Why does it sound floaty? Because it's a big interval between 1 and 4, and another big interval between 5 and 1. So it's like it's got all that going on. What I find interesting about the sus chord is the exact midpoint of any key, like from C to C, would be the flat 5. Like you're going from C to C, you go up 12 frets, right? But if you go up 6 frets, you get to G flat. It cuts the octave directly in half, right? But the sus chord is the notes on either side of the G flat, F and G. So it's like somehow perfectly balanced, i.e. suspended. It's like, I don't know how to describe it. There's some mathematical property that makes it. Makes it suspended, I don't know. All right, next one. C major 7. And then if you go up a half step, you'll get to E. Now, I only inserted an extra eighth note, so I didn't have to make a whole other bar. The rhythm has nothing to do with it here. It's just, all right, any questions about this? And you notice that the 7, between 7 and 8 is only half step. So if you ever need to find the major 7 of a chord, if you can find a root, you go down a half step. As per this example, you play regular C major. Like do a open C chord, and it has two roots, the one on the fifth string and one on the second string. If you go up, if you take the one on the second string down a half step by simply lifting up the first finger, there's your C major 7. So if you ever need, let's do another example. If you take a C bar chord at the third fret, and then you look at the two roots, it's usually better to take the upper octave down a half step rather than the lower one. It sounds kind of weird. If you took the lower one down, it would sound like this. And it just doesn't sound that nice, and it's hard to play. But if you took the upper one down a half step, now voila, you got a C major 7. Keep the other notes the same, yeah. So there you go. When you go to C7, now it's 1, 3, 5, flat 7. Back to 8. You notice two things here. You notice the 5th to the flat 7 is how far? Do it again on one string. How far from the 5th to the flat 7? It's 3 frets or a minor 3rd. Mm-hmm. How far is it from 7, the flat 7 that is, to root, to 8?
2 frets.
So how does it help you? Well, suppose you saw a chord that said C/B-flat. And now that's all it said, C/B-flat. Could you be able to instantly, you know, think to yourself, oh, that's just a C7. It's a third inversion of C7. Probably not at this point. But in time, you will. You recognize, do it with me. You play C, let's say at a third fret bar chord. And you're being asked to put a B-flat in the bass. You know that B-flat is a whole step below C. And you just saw that in a seventh chord, the flat seven is a whole step below the root, right? So you're decoding the fact that C/B-flat really makes it C7. And if you know that the bass player, if you're playing with the bass player, is going to play C B-flat, you can play C7. Play not C major 7, regular C7. Yeah, so let's play it together. First play C and then C/B-flat. Except, I'm the bass player, I'm going to play B-flat. So you're just going to play C and C7, not C major 7. Regular C first, then C7, one bar each. Like 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, mm-hmm. So that's just one example. The book may not say C7/B-flat, but certainly it's a lot easier to play C7 than to scrounge for this voicing. There's a lot of examples of things. When you get into slash chords, which is another article we'll deal with, you know, knowing this stuff is going to help you big time. That's just one small example. And we're going to move on to page 2 in the next file.